Bill Plash, Corey Crone, David Dennis Jr., Marcel Louis Jacques. It doesn't matter. Sorry, that's phrasing. That's Tennessee head coach Rick Barnes on one seat. Way to get us pumped for Selection Sunday, coach. Also, ESPN All-American team. I see Clark. I see Watkins, Brink, Hidalgo, Beckers. What's missing? Somebody from number one South Carolina. More fuel going into Selection Sunday.
Cardoza.
And the curious case of those 18,000 stolen Jaromir Jagr bobbleheads. Is it a prank? Do we have cargo theft? Is this a scene from The Sopranos? We'll discuss around the horn.
I saw him one of these people in L.A. We got here somewhere.
Never had the makings of a varsity athlete.
Oh, Tony.
The bracket. There's another reference for you. We'll get to it all now. Conference tournament week. Wild finishes so far. But it's Rick Barnes' quote on one seeds what we start with. I'm not sure if it does or doesn't matter. What matters more, probably the matchups. So, do one seeds still matter in the men's tournament, in the women's tournament? I'll ask both, but we'll start with the men's. Going into this conference tournament week, Bill Plaschke, what's at stake? Who are your one seeds?
Rick Barnes is right. It doesn't really matter anymore. The transfer portal and NIL money has changed everything. There's so much equality in college basketball. Last year, no one seed made the Final Four. There was a 4 seed, a 2 5 seeds, and a 9 seed. This is what we're looking at. So it really, all number one does is put a target on your back and put more pressure on you. I'd rather be a 2 or 3 seed. Mm-hmm. I'd rather be a Kentucky. I'd rather be a Marquette. I'd rather be Iowa State. Instead of a UConn or
you team. Mentioned that there were no one seeds in the Final Four. That was a bit of an aberration, wouldn't you say? When was the last one before
it's only the third time in history it happened, but it's the start of a trend. There's something behind this. Teams now can change overnight. They can change during the season. Everything's new. Everything's different. Nobody's guaranteed anything. I think these the powerhouses. Now, of course, my top 4 seeds are Houston, UConn, Arizona, and
he doesn't have a 14. There we go. I knew something. Could it be Tennessee? We'll go to Courtney Cronin here. Do one seed still matter?
They're losing their luster to a degree. Like, let's take the number one overall seed. The last team to win with the number one overall seed was 2013. That was Louisville. Since then, there have been 4 number one overall seeds that have even made it to the Final Four. So the competitive advantage that you're supposed to have is being one of, if not the best team, in theory, in the tournament, isn't really shaking out that way anymore. And Bill mentioned the Final Four that we got last year, where you have a 5-9 and a 5-4. Because of the transfer portal, because of the NIL era that we're in college basketball, that's changing the power dynamics and not making teams as top-heavy in the men's bracket as they have been in previous years. Now, I will say, Rick Barnes does have a good point, though, about the matchups, because you think about what side of the bracket they were in last year, where Purdue went down as a 1 seed mm-hmm. to Fairleigh mm-hmm. Dickinson, a 16 seed. It was the pace of play when they matched up with Florida Atlantic that ended up hurting Tennessee and bouncing them in the Sweet 16. So frankly, it doesn't matter what number you have next to you. Ultimately, it is about the style you play, the style they play, and how that shakes out in the
David
end.
David Dennis Jr., do one seed still matter?
Well, I will say, as the self-proclaimed one seed coming into today's show, I feel like it matters a whole lot. I feel like I have a distinct advantage over my
opponent. Right, you only have 4.
We could talk about, when we watch the tournament, it feels like there's so many upsets, and that is true, and a lot of them happen below the one seed. 5 of the last 6 champions were one seeds in these tournaments. You want to go before that, 12 of the last 16 were mm-hmm. one seeds. Even overall, 24 of the last 38 were one seed. So that is a huge part of it. Even though we feel like there are a lot of advantages going below that, the one seed still absolutely matters. In terms of who I have as those 4 one seeds, Purdue, Houston, UConn, Tennessee is, I think UNC is knocking on that door if they go do well in that tournament. Tennessee gets bounced out, but those are the 4 I have.
And Marcel Louis Jacques.
Well, while David's point is fresh, I'm going to say my one seeds. The first 3 are layups. It's UConn, Houston, and Purdue. All of them have double-digit quadrant 1 wins, undefeated in quad 2, 3, and 4. that's easy. I had Tennessee as my final four seed until some new information came across my desk, Tony, in the form of a loss to Kentucky at home while UNC goes to Cameron and beats Duke. I think that UNC is now that final four seed or that final one seed. They tore through the ACC. Couple rough patches in January and February, Georgia Tech, Clemson, Syracuse, but they're set to tear through the ACC tournament. If they win it, lock
them
in there.
So you think it's still in play for the ACC tournament, though, but if Tennessee takes care of business there, that's your one.
Yeah, as long as Carolina avoids an early tournament loss, which they got off to a resounding start today, beat the brakes off of Florida State, I think they're going to be fine. But the one seed still does matter. 24 of the last 38 national champions have been one seeds, regardless of, you know, it might be recency bias here. We've seen in the past 7 years the only instances of a one seed losing to a 16 seed, but that doesn't detract from the coronation of being a one seed in this
tournament. Courtney, I need your four number one seeds before we move on.
So my locks are obviously Purdue and Houston. Then I've got UConn. And if Tennessee makes it to the SEC championship, I think they get in.
And if they don't, who is the fourth that's on the other side? Is it North Carolina?
It would be UNC because conveniently UNC holds the tiebreaker over Tennessee.
Hey, you see, there's always that moment every year when I ask for the four picks and somebody gets me those top three and then they can't remember. That's Flashke this year. Ah, that's
right. And that is number four is Purdue.
Of course it is. We said it already. We'll move on. Everything you just said about one seeds, how that goes over in the women's bracket. Let's talk about that now. Juicy consideration for Sunday. Well, South Carolina, surely going to be the overall number one seed, but when will they meet up with LSU? When could they meet up with Iowa? When could Iowa meet up with LSU and some of these great bad blood, good drama matchups we know from last year and this year? We want those repeat matchups. Around the horn to Courtney Cronin.
So I'll give you my four right away so I don't mess up the assignment this time. Yeah. So obviously South Carolina, USC, Iowa, and I will go ahead and say Stanford. But let's not make a mistake about this when we think about the one seeds and what they mean in the NCAA women's tournament, because over history, 41 tournaments going into last year, 164 one seeds, 92 of those have been, I think 92 of those have made it to the Final Four. So basically 35 of the last 41 tournaments, there have been at least two one seeds in the women's game. Now, will the transfer portal era affect the landscape of college basketball in the women's game as much as it has in the men's game? I certainly think we're on par to get there, but if you are looking at the balance of power in the women's game, the one seeds do seem to matter a little bit more. Now, as for LSU and South Carolina, based on what we know from the NCAA and how they handle seeding and all of the regions, because those are the top two finishers in their conference, they're probably not going to get put in the same region. The earliest we would see them match up would be the Final Four in Cleveland.
Mm-hmm. Real quick, did you look down at a piece of paper to remember your fourth? I think you did. I think you did.
Of course I did. You know how many
things are.
That's
against the rules.
David Dennis Jr., yes. Your 4-1 seeds in the bracket.
Throw the flag.
USC, South Carolina, we're going Stanford, and we're going Iowa. Those are my four number ones. It happens to be the same as Cronin's, but it's okay. I agree, though. As much as the men's number one makes a big deal, the women's is even more important. Three of the four times in the history that they've had all four number one seeds in the Final Four have occurred in the last 12 years. So we see that happen often. However, this year is the one year where if you're number one seed, you have to be terrified of being in the same bracket as number two LSU because they are out for blood. They are a terrifying squad to go against. And it looks like they may be Stanford that they have to face. And that is something that you do not want to do.
Marcel Louis-Jacques.
Again, not a lot of variance here, Tony. My top four, South Carolina, easiest number one seed in either men's or women's brackets. I've got Iowa, I've got USC, and then I've got Stanford. Texas and I think LSU made things interesting, and Ohio State, but Ohio State has two losses to Iowa. USC or Stanford has two losses to USC. So I think those four are pretty solidified. And again, 85% of all women's Final Fours have contained at least two number one overall seeds. There's not as much parity in the women's game, although it has gotten a lot better over recent years. As a matter of fact, I think this is the more interesting tournament between the men's and the women's side. Now, like I am concerned about USC. They're led by a freshman, an all-world freshman, one of the best debut seasons we've seen in college basketball. But it does make me a little worried. USC's only made back-to-back tournaments one time since I think 2005 or 2006. still a little green. Meanwhile, experienced teams like Iowa, like South Carolina, they're going to be hard to get by.
Go Plaschke.
Juju Watkins had a bad game against Stanford in the Conference Championship, and USC still won. USC still won going away because they have more than her. USC is a complete team. USC belongs as a top seed, as does Stanford, as does Iowa, as does South Carolina. And like everybody said, this is almost a lock. 85% of the time, they were saying one or two seed gets into the final four. The women's college basketball it was so great because the athletes stay at the schools for all 4 years. And the teams, we know the players, we know the team, we know the stars. I don't want stars on the women's side, I do the men's side. So it's going to be great.
ESPN All-American team, Caitlin Clark, of course, Juju Watkins, of course, Cameron Brink, Anna Hidalgo, Paige Beckers. What's missing? Anybody
Cardoza.
From number one South Carolina. Now, that may be the right five. That's entirely legit. South Carolina has proven how balanced they are this year. But a fact remains how South Carolina could be going into this tournament somewhat still underrated while being undefeated. Take a break. Fire yourself next.
Don't tell them that.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guarantee Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
NBA night in triple doubles. Luka Doncic's streak ending at 7. Mavs still beat Golden State. Even with those sevens from Doncic, anyone knows who leads the league in triple doubles for a point?
Sabonis.
I heard it from everybody. Plaschke got in first. He gets the point. League leading 23rd last night as the Kings again stepped on the Lakers. Here's another trivia question for more points. Does anybody know Sabonis' career record head-to-head versus Anthony Davis?
10-0.
10-0.
Plaschke, unbelievably quick on the draw. Is your audio quicker to you? I wonder.
It's my team.
Bill, what you buy, what you sell from Kings over Lakers last night?
I'm selling the Lakers. I can't believe AD. He can't handle Sabonis. He's lost 8 straight to Jokic. He doesn't stand up and be himself. The Lakers can't win. All around him, D'Lo missed the first 7 shots. LeBron had 5 turnovers. He was terrible. The team 16-4 outscored in second chance points.
So you're selling the Lakers versus Sacramento in any matchup or in general?
I think in general, this was a game they had to win. They should have. They've been on a roll. They proved they can't play with this team.
Okay. Courtney Cronin, takeaway from last night: Kings over Lakers.
I'm buying the Kings' defense, particularly in the third quarter. So the Lakers were held to a season-low 17 points in the third quarter. It started with that turnover that LeBron had coming out of halftime. And when you take a look at the last 2 wins for them, so over the Bucks and then right again over the Los Angeles Lakers, those are 2 of the best teams in the top 10 in third quarter scoring. And to be able to watch them turn 14 turnovers into 17 points last
week. Did you just give a stat for third quarter scoring? Incredible research, Courtney. I'll go to David Dennis Jr. here. Your takeaway from Kings versus Lakers.
I'm selling my patience with Anthony Davis, who was supposed to be the guy carrying this team this far into LeBron James' career. LeBron James is clearly hobbled with that ankle, and it showed up defensively. He gave up half of the 19 threes by the Kings last night. But AD, not only is he 0 for 10 against Sabonis, not only is he 0 for the last 7 against Jokic, he's 1 for 7 against Embiid. You have to show up and dominate some of these games and be the guy to carry your team and be the alpha male on that court, and he is not doing it when it matters.
And Marcel Louis-Jacques.
Well, Tony, I've been waiting for this. Anthony Davis said he thought it would be hard for a team to beat the Lakers in a 7-game series. I didn't need to see 7. I just saw the Kings win 4 straight against them in the regular season. I'm buying Sacramento. Obviously, this is not the same top three team that we saw last season. They didn't make many big additions this summer, or they were banking on the development of their own players. And here we've seen De'Aaron Fox having a career season. Domantas Sabonis having an all-world season, even though he was an all-star snub, but that's an argument for another day. And then you've seen guys like Keegan Murray step up, especially defensively. We knew he could shoot from last season, but the charge he took on LeBron in the final quarter, that helped put the nail in the coffin against the Lakers last night. They're still battling to get out of that play-in tournament with Phoenix and Dallas, but Sacramento is still a good team. They are good enough to win a playoff series.
A playoff series this year while being a lower seed, it sounds like.
As long as Steph Curry doesn't drop 50 points in Game 7 again, I think that they have what it takes to win a playoff series.
Well, they could play him in the play-in. I see what you're saying. Man, are we doing a 30 for 30 on the Kings here, Marcel? There we go. Buy or sell two.
I'll happily.
NFL rule proposal.
I got you.
Combat the onside kick problem. Here's the proposal. One offensive play for 20 yards. You can call it a 4th-and-20 for the offense to convert instead of onside kicking. Courtney, buy or sell a proposal like that.
I'm buying it. I don't know if it'll go through, but let's be honest. The onside kick is dead. There was a point last season where the Saints tried one against the Rams in late December, and it marked that teams were 1 of 31 on converting those last year. The 4th-and-20 at least creates some excitement. It might add a little bit more time to the clock, but it's better than watching a play that has had no effectiveness, really, throughout the last couple of
years. David Dennis Jr.?
I'm selling the rule, the proposal as it's currently constructed. The offense has too many weapons to convert on a 4 or for 20, especially when you talk about penalties. There's pass interference. There's a holding down the field. There needs to be something else to help the defense in that 4th-and-20 situation to make it less probable, just barely more probable than what an onside kick is.
So you think 4th-and-20 would be almost too easy for an offensive team to keep possession. Marcel Louis-Jacques, buy or sell this proposal.
I guess I buy it compared to the other onside kick proposal proposed by special teams coaches where teams have to announce that they are preparing to kick an onside
kick.
Surprise! Onside kicks are supposed to be hard. They're supposed to be hard. Like, this isn't supposed to be a play that happens with a high success rate. Like, what's next? Hail Marys? Everybody has to start on the same line of scrimmage? Like, no. Like, difficult plays are supposed to be difficult. I'm selling it as an actual rule. I'm only buying it over the previous proposal.
So, Plashke, buy or sell.
It's not supposed to be this hard. The 2 of 41 were successful last year. That, like Courtney said, it's a dead play. It's a meaningless play. It would be a great, suspenseful, great end to a game if the Eagles' proposal went through. I love that idea. I think it keeps people in the game. It gives everybody a chance at the end. I think it's fun for the fans. Let's do something for the fans.
Buy or sell three. One more thing from the NFL. They're looking at the tampering free agency window. Kirk Cousins' Atlanta signing and Saquon Barkley's Eagles signing. A moment yesterday in Cousins' opening conference where he seemed to admit direct communication when it wouldn't be allowed. NFL itself called the first 2 days this week a legal tampering window, which suggests they know there is an illegal time and an legal time, but also that they're leaning into the whole idea of tampering. So, David, buy or sell?
I'm selling the idea that that this can be regulated across all sports. Kirk Cousins signed that deal 90 minutes after the period started. It takes me longer to decide what I'm getting from Uber Eats and to believe that this dude called the Falcons up at 12:01 and then made a life-changing deal right after that is asinine. This is all performative. They've been tampering all the time.
Marcel?
Remind me to never order Uber Eats with David Dennis Jr. 90 minutes, man. Come on. I think dry snitching is at an all-time high right now. Look, if it's not in season and they're not under contract, then it's not that big of a deal, man. I think they need to get away with this, get away with this rule. I'm selling it big time.
40 Cronin.
This reminds me of the skit, and I Think You Should Leave, where the guy shows up in the hot dog suit. It's like, we're all trying to find out who did this. Mm-hmm. That's what the NFL's doing. As you just said, Tony, they have a period called the legal tampering period. They know what's going on. Hundreds of millions of dollars are being invested into players. Teams are going to do their research.
All right, Plashkey, give me your 17 best points here.
What's Uber Eats?
Okay, all right. Good joke? All right. Cronin done. Dennis Jr. and Louis Jacques. David, I guess we got to get you on Uber Eats now if we want to be eating tonight. Or maybe just let's just think about breakfast tomorrow. By ourselves over Showdown next.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
David Dennis Jr., Marcel Louis-Jacques, good luck in Showdown. San Diego Padres acquiring Dylan Cease for prospects. He was runner-up in Cy Young 2 years ago, but they just traded Juan Soto. They just let Blake Snell walk. What are the Pods doing, and does this make them better?
It makes them better than they were when they made those decisions, but I'm not understanding exactly what's going on. It seems like they're trying to win, but within a certain budget, which doesn't always seem to work. You either go all in or you don't.
Mm-hmm. Marcel?
Well, they let three of their five starting pitchers walk this offseason. I appreciate them trying to remain competitive. What's the point of having a deep farm system if you're also trying to win games?
I like this. Musgrove, Darvish, Cease. I mean, that's a fine rotation. They have gone all in before, David Dennis Jr., and it hasn't exactly worked. This was making the best of a situation that was seemingly going sideways. We'll move on. Yaromir Yager bobbleheads. All right, here we go. The roller coaster of emotions in this story. Penguins announced earlier their shipment of Yager bobbleheads was stolen. Bobblehead night was ruined. It had us all thinking, what do you do with 18,000 Yaromir Yager bobbleheads on the black market? Then this video was posted, presumably prepared video of Yager on the case to find them. Now, what do we have here, Marcel?
I think we have the dumbest heist since Christopher Moltisanti stole a truck full of Italian
suits. Oh, how dare you.
And the best PR pivot hockey has ever seen.
That's a good thing. Go ahead, David.
Whatever is happening, this is all a result of dweeb resale culture. As somebody tried to get the Outkast bobbleheads at the Braves game last year, and they ended up on eBay for $100. This is all about raising the prices for collectibles and stuff that we should be able to have access to.
Is there a market for the Outkast bobblehead? I can understand. For Yager, 18,000 bobbleheads? It just had me thinking of the Lufthansa heist from Goodfellas and from The Sopranos, and that makes me happy. Point, David Dennis Jr.
I don't think I've had in the plus yet on the face-off. Anyway, I just wanted to say that we are right now in WrestleMania season, baby. 1 month away from WrestleMania, and wrestling is as popular as ever. Thanks to Dwayne The Rock Johnson, he is back. Is it going to be Roman Reigns, Cody Rhodes? Even in AEW, Mercedes Moné is there. Wrestling is cool again. Everybody tune in.
That's it. We're off tomorrow.
Are we really talking about WrestleMania?
We'll see you Monday.
Are we really doing that?